And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Okay, now what about a regular that...
The regular, we're on the air right now.
Okay, he'll fix that in later.
For the people listening to us right now, they have heard the opening of the show.
All right, so the kid behind the control booth, his name is Aaron.
Kid Aaron, right?
Okay. All right, kid, don't screw up. We're on live now.
No, we're not live. We're podcast.
No, we're live. I mean, we're alive live.
I don't know about
me. Don't confuse me.
I don't know about me. It's too early in the morning.
You know, it's too early in the morning to be that, you know, aggressive with our guest. Well, she's not even a guest. She's an old-timer.
Speaking to the microphone.
Before. Okay, well, let's do the intro.
Could you introduce yourself?
I'm Stan Weisleder, and the name of the show is The View from Over Here. And what kind of a view? Is whatever view we want to give you on that particular day, and we have absolutely no idea what it will be until that day arrives. With me on my right is Malcolm. Malcolm, say hello to our people.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to, is it A View from Over Here or The View from Over Here?
Well, some people call it A View. I like to call it The View.
The View. Actually, it's your view.
Yes.
Actually, it should be Stan's view from over here.
But I don't want to take all the credit because
why not?
You do add and you help out, as does our guest.
Introduce our guest.
Our guest has been with us before, so I want to welcome back Maria Kapp, very young lady who has accomplished an awful lot in the entertainment business. And we'll start off with some questions that we will throw at her, some real, real nasty, gritty questions.
Wait, you don't have any view of the news of what's happening with the convention Trump of...
You know, it's too boring. I have the weekly thing that goes out. What do we call that again? My weekly...
Stan's Rants.
Yeah, and... I get all kinds of comments on that. People tell me I'm crazy. Some people agree with me 1,000%. Some people actually say, you are so stupid, you don't know what the hell you're talking about. And they use words worse than that. Would you believe that?
No.
I think you encourage people to think and have conversation.
Well, that's the idea. I want to get a response. I don't care if they like it or don't like it. All I want to know is they're listening and they're responding in some way. Whether they like it or not.
What was your last rant? Your last rant, you said something.
Oh, the last rant. I forget from one week to the next.
Stan's Last Rant. That's a good name. I think we'll call it Stan's Last Rant.
Well, a week before, rather than ranting, I sent out about 20 political cartoons.
I remember, yeah.
Okay. They were colorful. They were nice. They were very politically oriented. They were really against the, well, not against, but anti the current administration. From Obama to Hillary to all of those guys.
So who are you in favor of?
I'm not necessarily
Bernie?
Favor. Well, Bernie's okay, except he is kind of up in years, and we don't know how long he'll last.
We don't know how long anyone will last.
That's true.
Yeah, I mean, Hillary, for that matter. She's got a little bit of weight going on there.
Yeah. Well, if I were to pick my person, I would probably pick, not that I think he's the greatest, but I think he's the best in the field presently. I would pick Trump. Why Trump?
Wow.
People say, what are you, stupid?
No, what are you, sick?
What am I, sick? Well, for one thing, you can't buy him. Okay?
Wait, I don't know that.
I think that is a good thing.
I mean, he says he's going to be against all the bankers or no one could buy him. But where does he get his money? Where does he do
exactly.
his loans? From the bank.
He's a businessman. He's a strategist.
He's made his money. He doesn't have
But his allegiance and alliance are with those that can help promote, finance, and continue to grow his empire.
Right.
So who are those people?
And I like what
people
he said.
People like him.
But I like what he said on one of the debates. He said, I'm a self-made man. My father only gave me $1 million when I started.
Guys,
what?
My daddy gave me $1 million.
My dad gave me about $10,000 in debt. But I like Trump because he should be funny.
Yeah.
I mean, if it wasn't so serious, I can imagine him going to the Congress and the Congress not doing what he wants. And the next session he goes, you're fired. You quit.
Yeah, I just, my only fear is for the that party and having him as the number one candidate is that there's a lot of people that do like what he stands for and what he's saying and how he's, you know, in his philosophical and business strategies, but it's also creates no other option for that party. And that's very scary for me because then it makes the Democratic Party that much stronger. And, you know, I'm looking at that as I'm someone that's looking at that.
Well, I don't think that if Trump should get in, I don't think he would be as radical as he has come across so far. I really don't. I think he will tone down a lot. And also, when I look, what are the alternatives? The alternative is for Hillary Clinton to get in, and that, to my way of thinking, would be terrible. And I don't think there's any Republican around who can beat her. If there's anyone who could beat her, it would be Trump.
Yeah.
The other guys,
they're too weak.
They're too weak. They're not strong enough to beat her. She has such a solid base.
The other thing is, too, is that she's a woman, and her running would be, you know, just such a milestone in our country and in history, like Obama was for the African-American community.
Yes, but in Hillary's case, I think, and maybe the idea did occur to her, but if she selected Bill Clinton as her VP running mate, which is legal.
I don't know if it's legal.
She would not do that.
It is.
Why would she want her husband to be the vice president?
Can he serve a third term in case something happens to her?
You can only serve two terms as president, whether they are set consecutive or 10 years
but
apart.
But what would be her advantage point? What would strategically, how
because
would that
Because he's well-liked. Value? He's well-liked, and it would probably help gather a lot of votes. Mm-hmm.
As a vice president,
no,
what about as part of her team in another capacity?
Well, the capacity when they're in the bedroom alone.
Well, that's
and she said, and she would say, Bill, what do you think I should do?
You mean like pillow talk?
Right.
Yeah. Well, okay. Well, that's a foregone conclusion. But I think that if he was officially the VP under her, I think that would gather a lot of votes for her. But I don't want her as president anyway.
Trump and he'll have as a vice president Sarah Palin. Because she came out the other day favor of him.
By the way, she favored
really?
Him.
Yeah.
She supports him.
She supports him. That's she came out, I think, yesterday or the day before. Yes.
So this is great stuff you're talking about. What was the other rant you did? There was something else that you did that was not political, but it was something, it was a couple of weeks ago or maybe even a month ago.
Oh, by the way, you can go on to Malcolm Digital Radio and you'll have all of Stan's rants. Mm-hmm.
Maria,
some you like, some you don't like, but you can also comment on it.
From one week to the next, which one? If you tell me what it was about, I would remember. Like for this week, I'm getting prepared for what things used to be. Like we used to get respect. Law officers and people in uniform used to get respect. Now it's like, and Malcolm, is it correct? I can say whatever I like here.
You could say whatever you like.
I won't be censored like on that other station.
No, you won't be censored. The only one censors you is your wife, but she doesn't listen to the show.
That's correct. Okay. All right. You know, like in the old days, everybody respected police, cops, your teacher, the principal. If you were told you had to go down to the principal's office, boy, you were scared shitless. Now it's who the fuck cares? You know, that's the kind of thing that the public has come to over the years. And I think it all started with the Vietnam War, where protests were the rage. And one thing led to another, and it kept extrapolating until we have it today, where there's probably or practically no respect at all for people in authority. And you know we, the two of us, sometimes give no respect to people in authority.
So we're guilty of it also.
And if I may add something, I have to tell you that I see in very little ways, but in good ways, respect. Respect from my children to their peers to their school. And it comes obviously from the family.
Yes.
But I understand what you're saying because my dad, you guys, not to age us, but you're like... I look at you with respect of wisdom, years, experience,
because
and where
we're
you
older
come.
Than you.
You are. And my father is in the same place of a grandfather looking at his grandchildren. But I will tell you that there's a couple of things that I see with my three children, especially my son, who's still in school. He's no longer, though, in a public school setting. So there's something to be said about that large public mass versus a smaller private situation. But in a smaller private situation where there is zero tolerance for disrespect and things like that, there is respect. There is fear. You go to the principal's office and you feel like you said, uh-oh, I'm in trouble. What's going to happen? Or your teacher, you know, there's a Mr. and a Ms. and there's proper etiquette in terms of how you speak and approach. And there's just, it's just respectful all the way around. And I just want to say that to you because to encourage you to have a little bit of hope. You know what I mean? You know what I mean? In the younger generation.
Your kids are going to private school now?
My older daughters have both been in the public. Well, all my children have been in public and private settings. The two older ones are now, you know, graduated from college. And their experience in a small private setting versus public is where you can draw the line and see the differences in what it is that you're talking about in terms of the mass, in terms of disrespect, in terms of attitude with the teacher, anybody in authority, teacher, police officer, someone older. Give up your seat for someone who's pregnant, handicapped, or older, you know, on the subway or something like that. Just basic etiquette. I think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah. I'll give you another one. One of the items that will be for this week is the fact people don't know what is going around about them. They're out to lunch totally. For instance, you call up a restaurant or a store where you want to go to have dinner or you want to buy something. And you say, where are you located? They give you a street name and a number of that particular spot on the street. And then you typically say, well, what is your nearest cross street? Or what exit is that on the freeway? And I always get the answer, duh, I don't know, I'm not sure.
Exactly, because we live in an age of digital internet, and all you need to do is plug that address in with a zip code and MapQuest or Google Maps.
You're right.
We'll get you there. So no one knows what their cross street is. Nobody knows what exit it is.
But how does that person know how to get to work even?
They use their GPS. Are
they smart enough to do that?
What's it, WASI, where you
put
it? Waze.
Yes.
Waze is very good.
You put in the address and it tells you. You don't even have to look down. It's make a right turn.
Listen, when I came to L.A. back in the 90s as an actor, I used Hagstrom. No one knows what a Hagstrom map is. You guys know.
Sure.
Yeah, but no one today. My children don't know what a Hagstrom map is. They don't know how to read a grid in a map like that. Everything now is digital. And today, I do not use a Hagstrom. I plug in. As a matter of fact, I woke up late this morning, dropped my son off. He's literally down the road at school, and I knew that ahead of time, so I was grateful. But my calendar on my phone, Google Calendar, popped up, said 10 o'clock on air address. So I said, Steven, he's my co-captain. Hit it. See how far it is from your school. So it was on my phone. That's how I got here.
That's what my kids do. I have two boys. Both of them are in college. One is going to be 21, and the other is just 19. When they come home, I save all my problems from the computer or my cell phone. Okay, how do you do this? How do you do that? And they look at me, Dad, I told you that the last time I was here. I know. I remember you told me, but I don't remember what the hell to do. And they look at me like, a part of my brain has been destroyed. How could you be so dumb?
Easy.
They're wired differently. Our kids are wired differently.
Well, the thing is what they
generation.
The thing is what they do is when they attack the problem to go over to either the internet or to the cell phone, they know they're going to solve it.
Yes.
They have the brain thing. Oh, they may not know what to do.
Everything is connected differently.
Right.
I mean,
I go there. I say, I'm not gonna. It's not gonna help. The words that you said.
I'm afraid to change my phone. Right when you get a new phone, or isn't it like?
Well, why is that?
Because
you mean a new number or a different piece of
just
equipment?
Just a different piece of equipment that's been upgraded.
Right, with different memories.
With different memories, because it's a little slight differences. You know, the thought of letting go of what I'm comfortable and familiar with. Do you know how long it took me to replace my laptop because of that?
Yeah, I'm going through that now with, I just got rid of U-verse.
AT&T U-verse.
AT&T U-verse, and I'm back to Time Warner.
Right.
I was thinking of switching from Time Warner to AT&T.
And it's been a week now, and I'm still
figuring it out,
because I hit buttons and nothing happens.
Because you're used to the way it used to work, right.
Are you, you're not for U-verse?
No, the only reason I was against U-verse is because it cost me less money to do Time Warner with the same package. And I'm spending probably like about $60 a month less.
Yeah.
Now for them, I'm, between because I also have the three-way package because I have the Wi-Fi and the internet. I have for some reason I can't leave, leave out my landline.
Yeah.
I'm old-fashioned. My wife says, drop the landline.
No, we have a landline too. We do.
And I'm sort of like, no landline? Only a cell phone?
No, I like having a landline.
There are a lot of people that have given up landlines. Yeah. Only cell phones.
Yeah.
The only thing I get in the landline is marketing calls.
Yeah.
Everyone else,
I
know.
Oh, I get marketing calls. I got three marketing calls while we were coming here, remember?
The landline is like that thing I'm talking about. It's fear of letting go of something, But I like it because it's a backup. The cell coverage doesn't work for whatever the reason is.
Right.
Then you always have the landline.
It's good backup. But you mentioned before about getting rid of a laptop or changing a laptop.
Yes.
Have you considered an iPad? Once I tried this gizmo, not used my laptops.
Yeah.
They're antiquated.
But I do so much production work, and I also do a lot of virtual classes, and I coach virtually.
Okay.
I have clients that are in London, France. I have one woman who's in Singapore. So for me, I have a laptop that actually has a big screen, and then I have a separate screen so that I can. So the way my office is set up, I need it.
Did you Skype them?
I do. I use Skype as a way to teach classes of clients that are not here, and I also do group classes sometimes with as many as 6 clients at a time. So the big screen is really essential. And, I'm of the age, too, where the eyeglasses, going from, reading copy or writing to the screen to the phone, I really find that the larger screen, and I have the maximum screen size on my laptop.
Okay,
and
glad
you probably
you're
could
talking.
Do that, hook that into your television set if you want to.
I have used it when I do Skype. As a matter of fact, we did a reading for one of the scripts that I had optioned last year, and I had 22 actors in my living room, and we were reading for the benefit of the screenwriter. And the screenwriter was in Brooklyn, and I had 22 people in my living room in Los Angeles, and we connected my laptop Skype to my big flat screen TV so that the actors and the screenwriter saw each other in this big, large view.
Yeah, years ago we didn't have that.
Amazing what you can
Maria,
do.
Maria, you started to talk about what you're doing, so let's get back with that because you are the guest today.
Oh, okay.
So like I said earlier, Maria Kapp, she's in the biz, and she's done just about everything and anything in this particular industry, which is the entertainment industry. So Maria, let's start off with a little bit about your background. First, where did you come from?
I am a New York girl, New Yorker.
What part of New York?
So I was born and raised for the first few years of adolescence on Castle Hill Avenue in the Bronx. And
have you gone back there recently?
Every time we visit New York, it's kind of like, yes, to answer the question, absolutely yes, because my grandparents lived off of Castle Hill Avenue on Homer Avenue, and then they moved to the Pelham Bay area. Up until 1988. And in my young adult life, when I was working in Manhattan, I actually lived with my grandparents for a little while. So to answer the question, that's where I grew up, Castle Hill Avenue, till about 7 years old. And then my family migrated to Ronkonkoma, Smithtown area on Long Island.
Long Island.
On Long Island, yes.
Yeah, Long Island, yeah.
And then married a Smithtown guy and also a Long Islander.
Was he a potato farmer?
He was a potato farmer on the Nesconset fields of potatoes.
Okay.
I think it's called White's. The potato farm is there's a 7-Eleven, and now there are restaurants and condos there now. But I think it was called White's Farm, which is
Any changes in those areas since
left? Oh my gosh! Are you kidding me? When I moved out to Ronkonkoma, which was Lake Ronkonkoma, my mom, the house that they bought is up on a hill, literally up the hill from the lake, and it was woods. There were intermittent homes, woods. I was able to run with my 3 younger siblings and walk barefoot in the woods, down to the lake, jump in the lake. My mom would yell out the back door, Maria, Joanna, Carmela, Tommy, come home for lunch. Today, It is complete concrete, and there is not a speck of woods.
That's called progress.
Progress. It's called disgusting middle of Long Island concrete storefront. I don't know what. Ron Kakama, Long Island Railroad. I slip my coffee.
All right,
airport.
Maria, let's move up this.
Okay, you're sorry, you asked.
Yes, I think so. It's different. It's different.
Everyone should know. Now, let's move it up a bit.
Yeah.
How did you come to California? What made you get the bug? How did you start? How old were you when you said, I want to be in showbiz?
So,
tell us a little bit about that.
So my I come from a family of showbiz people with, you know, varying levels of success, but certainly major talent. My grandfather was a violinist, prodigy. My grandmother was a radio star at the age of 10 during the 1920s and 30s. My mom, though, is the one, when we moved out to Long Island, she was an equity actor as a young woman. And then when she got married and raised her family, that was her priority. But as we got a little bit older, and her creative outlet was to be involved in local theater. So my mother really is the one who got involved in local theater on Long
Island.
And
she encouraged you.
Oh, absolutely. And her friends were, you know, varying levels of professionalism. One of them was a talent manager. And as a talent manager, she repped myself and my siblings. And at 16, I earned my SAG card and did my first commercial. And but at 10 years old, I think my first production was in Carousel as one of the Snow Children.
So in your case, it was genetic.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So it always was in my blood, but I never, you know, I can honestly say that I've never earned a complete living off of being a professional actor, but I have always earned money whenever I've worked intermittently. But I did a more corporate route. My background is in psychology in terms of education.
Well, what school did you go to?
I graduated from State SUNY at Old Westbury, and then I attended St. John's University in Queens on a graduate level. And I also found myself drawn to human resources and recruiting and staffing. So that's my corporate background, and that's really what I've done, and that's really where I've earned a living. I owned an employment agency for a little while, and then I worked for ADP, their ICS financial division, as a manager of staffing.
All right, but tell us about the different aspects of your work in the entertainment industry.
Yes, so always dabbling. And what I can say is that after I had my first two children and was a homemaker, left my job, I got back into acting. I was going on auditions and just focusing on that. I had an agent and was working. I worked both on stage in the city as well as doing a lot of commercials and industrials. And then an opportunity that my husband had was to come to the West Coast in the 90s. And I was like, baby, picket fence, 30-year mortgage and house will be there forever. Let's go. So that's what we did. We came to L.A. in the 90s, and we were here for about 2.5 years. And while I was here, I also immersed myself in Los Angeles and in the Hollywood scene as an actor. I studied at Ivana Chubbuck's studio. I studied a little bit with Larry Moss. And I went on auditions.
Teach you at acting school?
I was really drawn and really love Ivana Chubbuck's method, and that is the method that I teach and implement in when I work with young people.
Which is?
She has a 12-step method that is extremely focused on human behavior and psychological, the psychological component of the way one thinks, a human being thinks, and then taking that human behavior and bringing that truthfulness, whether it's pain and love and affirmation, to the work of someone else's words. And Ivana has coached and has an alumni. I mean, many people who you don't know, many people who are working actors and your names you don't know, but many, many, many Academy, Tony, and Emmy Award-winning actors.
Do they teach differently for stage acting versus movie acting?
No. It's
all the same emotion?
It's all the same emotion. The only thing is knowing how to play to the back of the audience, to a large house where it's filled with 600 people, versus knowing how to play, if you think about, say, like Tom Hanks and Forrest Gump. I love to use that the scene as an example. The scene where he's talking to the gravesite of his beloved Jenny.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, if you think about that scene, that's a different scene for him to play if he were doing something on stage. And that scene is that the camera is down on the ground looking up at Tom Hanks' face, and he is talking to the camera. The camera is what's, right? That's the camera.
Yes.
But he's creating that intimacy and that reality and that truth.
Yeah, she is the camera.
Yes. So really it's just having the technique and being able to be authentic, and then the tool or the skill set for the actor is to be able to take the different medium and apply that.
Now, I've never heard of that school of acting, but years ago I heard of something called the Stanislavski method.
Well, Ivana is from the Stanislavski school of thought.
So
you have a lot of people out there. You know, you have Stella Adler, you have Ivana Chubbuck. Ivana Chubbuck comes from the Roy London line, and that whole thought process is based on a Stanislavski methodology.
Actually, years ago, I used to go to Herbert Bergdorf.
Yes.
In the Village.
Yes. HB Studios.
Yeah.
You have, what's her name?
I'm forgetting also his wife.
Yes. Beautiful woman. Oh, my God. She's written so many books. She's all about observation and people's behavior.
Yeah.
Uta Hagen. Beautiful.
Ah,
great books. Yes.
I never got into her class.
Oh, I was in the master class with Michael Beckett for a while. Yeah.
People ask me if I was ever an actor. I said, yeah, I've been an actor all my life. I've been in consulting most of my life. And if there isn't anything closer to acting than when
you are a consultant,
is?
As someone in human resources who does recruiting, staffing, consulting, coaching, and training and development, I mean, that's why I was drawn to it.
That sales.
Yeah, absolutely.
Actually, everything, you're selling yourself.
Absolutely.
It's also referred to sometimes as BS.
Bullshit.
Yeah.
And if you're good enough at it.
Someone's cell phone is ringing.
Oh, my God.
Good
this
morning.
Is another sales call.
You can put them on the air.
Put them on the air. Answer. Let's see what happens. Do that. That's funny.
So you are now on the air. Tell us.
Hello? Anybody there?
Okay. That's
one of those.
It's a computer call.
Can I say what I want to say?
You can say anything you want.
Fuck off.
Bye.
I just kindly say, please remove me from your list.
Right.
Please put me on your do not call list, but stand.
I tried that. It doesn't help.
Yeah, you know, it does. I don't know. There's a way. There's something technologically. There's an application you can do.
Well, there's a number, supposedly,
you can call that puts
you on the no hit list.
Yeah, yeah.
But I use something new now because I get a lot of calls for home improvements, solar paneling.
You
whatever.
Must have filled out some kind of form where they're selling your name and list.
Yeah, so I'm on the sale list. So what I do now, I say, why are you calling me? I don't have a home. I live in an apartment.
You're still on the list. They just won't call you. They just won't call you up from that particular company.
So someone else calls. They have another person at that same number because I'm beginning to recognize all these numbers. Different people at this same establishment are calling me. If one doesn't get through, they pass it along to one of their buddies.
Well, I keep on getting calls for this thing for credit cards. They say, there's no worry. Your credit card is fine.
Yeah.
But we can lower your rates. But if you want to go on if you're not interested, please press 3 and I will take you out and we'll take you
have
off
you
the
guys
list.
Ever been,
and I press
have
3.
You guys ever received a call where you knew it was a complete scam?
Yes, I have fun with them.
So did I. I have fun with them. I say, okay, so what is it that you'd like me to do? You'd like me to wire how much money? And where is the routing number you'd like me? And what information would you like me to disclose to you? I have. And I had a gentleman say to me on the phone, wow, you're really smart. I said, yes, and I'm having fun right now.
Yeah, I haven't gotten them recently, but I get a call from someone.
They want you to give them $2,500.
No, obviously with a foreign accent.
Yes, of
and
course,
they say,
always.
We're from the IRS.
Yes, that's exactly the call I got.
Right. The IRS,
don't worry, everything's okay, but
you owe $2,500.
And if you do not do something, like legal issues will be...
Well, not legal issue. They say, if you don't answer this call, we're going to send the police, the sheriff department over to you tonight.
That's the call I got. I have gotten that call.
And I wind up, the call is either from the... Sometimes when I talk to them and they admit they're either from the, you know, because they're always like Bob Smith, some very American name, you know,
yeah.
John Doe. And I usually find, okay, what part of India are you from? What part of the Philippines are you from? They say, no, we're in Washington, D.C.
Malcolm, next time say, I'm busy right now. I'm on the other phone. So give me your number. I'll call you right back. I promise.
By the way, isn't the IRS, isn't the Internal Revenue Service, it's not in Washington. Isn't it in Sacramento or upstate Albany or something?
I have no
idea. They're all over the country.
But the IRS also says they never call for funds.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's always
they never call anyway.
Yeah. Well, a big scam is which they I get older people.
Yes.
Now, I don't know how much older I could get, but where they'll call up and say, your grandson is stuck in Mexico and they robbed his passport.
Yes, and he needs you
and
to wire
needs money
immediately.
And if you get someone that's, you know, that maybe not, you know, quite there anymore, you know, in their 80s and 90s, they'll do it because they're in panic.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah. And then the other scam that I've received is when I post things on Craigslist. You have to be real careful if you've ever used that service online to either sell, rent, or advertise.
I've never used Craigslist.
Well, people, what'll happen is because you make your email, if you make your email public on there, that's what happens. Or if your email is sometimes public on Facebook, that's another way. If you have a Facebook account, that's another way people could be finding your number. It's called phishing. Phishing. But anyway, so regardless, what I wanted to say is a scam would be that you get an email from someone that says, hello, and I'm from Britain, and you can hear the accent in the way they write the email. And they say, I'm very much interested in renting your property, and I would like to wire, $5,000 in full to your account. And what I need is, or the other email is help me. I'm sick, or family member's sick, and then they ask and they give this long email message with a plea.
Yeah, or the ones, my great-grandfather died.
Yes.
And I have to get money out of Ghana, but
yes.
I can't do it myself.
I need your assistance.
And I need your assistance, and we will give you $5 million.
Yes. Yes.
Hey, I'll give you a better one. I've gotten a few of these in the last couple of months, actually three.
Speak into the mic.
All together. Well, not all together at the same time, but within a relatively short time. I'd get an email from somebody who I know.
Yeah.
Okay? And they would say something, I'm stuck here in Milan.
Yeah.
I lost my whatever, whatever.
Right. Help me.
If you could send me $500, I'd really appreciate it.
$500? My requests are usually like $5,000.
Well, the more they ask the less likely you are to
ascend. Email's been tapped.
Yeah.
A few hundred bucks, you may fall for it. So I've gotten a number like that, so I just ignore them. I got one from the wife of an ex-client the other week.
You've definitely been hacked for sure.
Yeah, well anytime I get something from someone that I know where it has multiple email addresses on there and it says, hi, I haven't spoken to you in a long time, where you have to...
Yes.
Get into where you have to access that, I don't do it, I just erase.
Yeah, I have a funny story.
Tell
Can
us.
I tell you a funny story?
Yes.
It's funny, but I find it a little bit invasive, and it actually has become an action step, something that I really have to pay attention to and where I'm going to take care of cleaning it up. And it has to do with my social media presence. So we were talking about privacy, right, and people accessing.
Privacy anymore.
No. So you really have to be careful. So I use Facebook a lot, and it's a great tool to keep in touch with people, not only professionally, which I do, but personally, family and friends. So I use my Facebook not just privately for family and friends. I do use Facebook as a business tool, a marketing tool, and a way to keep in touch with people. So, and then I also use LinkedIn. You guys use LinkedIn, right?
Yeah.
So to me, LinkedIn has a very specific protocol. There's a very specific boundary. LinkedIn is very professional. Do you agree? It's a business tool.
Well, they're more professional than Facebook.
Exactly. Meaning in terms of a business profile, and it's not a place where people reach out socially to connect. It's more of a business connection.
Right. Anytime we have a social media person that works for us, and anytime we want to use LinkedIn for something else, I'm sorry, you can't use LinkedIn. They won't let you do that.
Well, I received Facebook, I get odd messages all the time. I get friend requests all the time. I actually had a young man that I felt a little bad for, and I did spend some time engaging, and I could have been being scammed, and I ended it, but I did pay it forward and gave him some information.
Well, what do you do when someone wants to, let's say, be your friend?
Right. Well, I'll give you two examples. So this one Facebook situation was a gentleman from one of the countries in Africa that really is suffering, and he sounded extremely...
They're all suffering.
I know, but he sounded authentic in
the
term...
But he has a computer.
He has a computer.
An internet.
Of course. And he's very athletic, and his Facebook page showed his athleticism. It showed the truth of his community and where he lived. And he reached out to me because he was trying to receive sponsorship so he could come to Santa Monica College to study. So again, I engaged.
You better be careful.
No. Listen, I'm not a stupid woman, right? But I'm also, I don't want to not help someone if I can. So what I did was I gave him links. I gave him resources. I gave him suggestions on what to do. He was asking me to sponsor him. And with that, it did involve filing an application fee and setting everything up. I did go to the school. I found out that, in fact, this is the truth.
It is legitimate.
And it is a legitimate process, but I did not want to get that involved.
So that that would cost you $19 a month, like those ads?
No. Okay. I didn't want to get that involved. So that's just one example. Right, on Facebook. So all I did was pay it forward. I just shared information, shared resources, gave him some suggestions, and then apologized that I was unable to make the commitment to sponsor him. But anything and any questions you have. And he respected that and he stopped. So I think that it was probably legit. And his Facebook looks legit. Then I get stuff on Facebook where people are like evasive, like, hey, hi. You know, like you can hear it, hi. You know?
Well, I constantly get that.
Yeah, hi. What do you want? Do you know what I mean?
I like your picture.
I like your picture.
I'll send
you pictures. So those people, then I look at their profile, I go back and I'm more clear, and I eliminate them. They're no longer my friends. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? So, but what I wanted to tell you is LinkedIn. I had a recent experience with LinkedIn, and it really, really, really irked me. I had a professional request me, and he had a professional profile. I believe he was either insurance or real estate, one of those professions. I looked at his profile, he had endorsements, he had a website, everything was legit. So I accepted him as a LinkedIn connection. Then I get a LinkedIn message. And the LinkedIn message—
From his source.
From him.
From him.
No, personally. Okay. And the LinkedIn message is about how good looking I am. Forgive him for being so forthcoming. If I'm not married, if I'm single, he'd like to meet me. All of this stuff. And this was LinkedIn. This is the first time it has ever happened to me.
I haven't heard that before.
But
with LinkedIn.
It was on LinkedIn. And I was not... I
he thought it was a dating service.
Exactly.
Well, so you can complain someplace to LinkedIn.
I don't have the time to complain. I just politely responded back to him saying... This is a professional networking.
Well, maybe he thought you were professional.
Sir,
you mean like a pro?
I have played the lady of a brothel house on stage in Jekyll and Hyde, but I am not the lady of the house in that way. Anyway, just it really, really irked me. But social media is also something that, you know, you have to be really careful about because people can find you who want to.
Okay, let's go forward. What are you doing nowadays?
Yes.
Let's get to the nitty-gritty of why you're here.
Yes, well, so you guys invited me back because I guess it was a year and a half ago when I visited you
around that time
live. You guys were live doing the radio show, and I was in the process of directing and producing Dog Sees God, Confessions of a Teenage Blockhead. We were doing that production, which was very successful at the Santa Monica Playhouse. It ran, I think we did 12 or 18 shows during the month of December. We had our red carpet event, which was creating awareness for the Trevor Project. We had the privilege of co-producing it with the Free Your Mind Projects, a husband and wife team that run a nonprofit podcast website resource for mental health awareness. And we also were here talking. I was talking about the red carpet event.
Yes.
And I met Jerry Costanzo, former Long Islander, who I have to tell you, as a result of that, I have become friends with him. My parents have seen him perform back on Long Island, and he connected me with his young son, Christopher, who's an actor here. And I've cast Christopher in my reading for for a script. Christopher, I cast in a YouTube video for a product called Taptured. My daughter was also in that with him, Raffaella. And I had him over for dinner the other night for my first annual Cappuccielli production, Italian Cucina.
Oh.
Yes.
Is that your full name?
Cappuccielli.
Cappuccielli.
My husband's last name is Cap, and it was shortened by his great-grandfather when they came to Ellis Island. To avoid discrimination, they wrote C-A-P-P. C-A-P for Peter, P for Peter.
So, but
not
now,
cats, not cat, not Cap, like Andy Cap, Al
Andy
Cap.
But now, actually, the way in showbiz is to keep your full last name.
Well, Cappuccielli. It just rolls off the tongue. Right.
And, and you have to put your hands up.
Put your hands up. I think when people hear it, they get a sense of who we are.
And it is a
I'm proud to be an American Italian. I am an American, but my heritage is I'm Italian. Mm. I'm a Sicilian, Napoli Don. Mm. I love spaghetti and meatballs.
Where I grew up. And I grew up in Coney Island in Brooklyn.
Yes.
You're either Jewish or Italian.
That's right.
There was no in between.
Well, my husband and I are
well,
often...
Well, what if you're intermarried?
My husband, Stephen Allen Cap and Maria Cap, living in Los Angeles, are often mistaken for Jewish people. Yes. Which is a good thing.
You live in Los Angeles. You're in showbiz.
Yeah, I'm Jewish.
You're Jewish.
I'm Jewish, but I'm Italian. So Cappuccielli Productions.
That reminds me of a story. There was this... I'm forgetting his name. A friend of mine they always saw at the Palm restaurant. He's Italian,
yes.
Older Italian.
Yes.
He's short.
Yes.
With
in Beverly
with
Hills.
White hair.
You've seen him in Beverly, right?
No, in the old days.
Oh,
back
okay.
on Santa Monica Boulevard.
Okay. That restaurant's still there, isn't
no,
it?
No, they closed that on Santa
okay,
Monica.
Okay, so now it's just
in Beverly Hills.
Okay.
But anyway, I saw him at a few years afterwards, and he was at the, I think it was Bally's at the time. And he was, you know, mostly naked, but he was wearing a big Jewish star.
Mm-hmm.
And I said, what the hell are you wearing a Jewish star for? You know, you're born in Italy. He says, yeah, I was born in Rome, dummy. But that had the oldest church, the oldest synagogue in Europe. I'm Jewish.
It's true.
So you can be Italian heritage, but you could be Jewish.
Oh, I am Jewish. I'm a Jesus girl for sure.
You say that, I have to tell you, somebody said a long time ago, and I've heard it repeated at various times, that the second language of Hollywood is Yiddish. I've heard it so many times from different sources.
I live in a beautiful Yiddish community right now.
Where do you live?
I live in Hancock Park.
Okay.
And I live,
okay.
Yeah, I live right off of Cross Street, 3rd and La Brea.
Ah.
See, I know my Cross Street.
What did you think the first time you went to Hancock Park?
I love Hancock Park.
There's some beautiful homes there.
Well, you know, the first time
I don't live in the mansion community.
You don't live in a mansion.
I'm in a beautiful duplex, and it's but the street I live on is absolutely gorgeous. And every Friday night, I am entertained with song and piano and the Sabbath. I mean, I hear the families, you know, and
is it a Hasidic neighborhood?
Or? Oh gosh, yes, yes, yes. So
everybody's walking.
Walking to temple. Yeah. Grandpas, moms, dads, intergenerational and children. I mean, it's just beautiful. I love it.
The first time we went through Hancock Park, it was by accident. We were going to some wedding, I forget whose or exactly where, but we had to drive through. And all of a sudden, it was like we were in a time warp.
Yeah.
Where did all these buildings come from?
Yes.
It was like
beautiful,
an earlier era.
And then there's a beautiful Catholic church on 3rd called St. Brennan's, which is also a Catholic school. It's gorgeous. There's many, many temples in the area. There's a large Jewish preparatory school, I think, that goes from pre-K all the way up to 12th grade. I think there's an all-girls.
Is it the Marbury School there?
That's Marbury. Yes, that's over there as well.
Oh, well, wait a minute. We're getting off track.
Yeah, I know.
Maria.
So it's like we're hanging out, having a cup of coffee and eating bagels.
Anyway, we keep on going tangential.
Yeah.
Okay.
Okay.
I want you to talk about what your favorite things are.
All right. So Dog Sees God. So what ended up happening after that is that we had a successful red carpet event, the Trevor Project opening night.
Now, what is the Trevor Project? Again.
So the Trevor Project is a non-for-profit organization that provides crisis intervention specifically to the LGBTQ.
It gets too long.
No, but it's important. Community. And specifically for youth at risk to prevent.
I know what LGBT stands. What's the Q?
Questioning.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So, we chose that organization because one of the main themes and one of the plot lines in the play is that one of the young characters does take his life, and he is questioning. We don't know if he's questioning his identity. He's questioning his place. He has a back history of lots of issues, lots of troubles, and things unfold within the high school community where he finds no alternative but to end his life. So, you know, the Trevor Project talks about suicide as a permanent solution to a temporary problem. So it's the idea that you have a temporary feeling that passes.
It's not a temporary problem.
It always is. There is help. There are resources. There are medications. It's always temporary. It always passes. You know, Robin Williams passed away the summer before we did the show, which was also something that perpetuated my choosing this play. And I lost a student who I only had in class once. But the student that I lost was friends with many of the other students that I had since they were 10 years old. He put himself in front of the Long Island Railroad train in Sayville and took his life. Mm. Also because he was questioning. Also because he was suffering, whatever that suffering may be, whether it was family issues, finding his way in school, or, you know, mental illness. But it is temporary. With the right resources.
Well, life is temporary.
Exactly. So why choose to permanently solve that with an alternative that just brings pain and suffering to the people you leave behind? Yeah,
and then there's the old Shakespeare, to sleep, perchance, to dream, I there is a rub. Who knows what happens after?
Exactly. So for Cappuccielli...
What do you think happens afterwards?
What do I think? Well, you know... My Roman Catholic upbringing has taught me one thing, and my years as a human being on planet Earth and as a parent and someone that has lost people has given me a little bit of a different take on it all. And I think that anybody that passes from here to there becomes a bold, bright light in the sky, and those are all the stars that are twinkling out there. And that energy is there for us to draw upon. They become guardian angels. They become lessons. They become memories.
But is there a consciousness to people after?
Absolutely. Can I curse?
So you believe?
Absolutely.
Oh, you can.
So
you're a woman.
Believe
you can't curse.
In ghosts.
I believe in ghosts and spirits. And again, not to go off tangent, but I raised my children in a 1885 home in Sayville, New York. There were shackles in the attic.
I don't want to go into that story. That's next time.
Shackles in the attic, and I had beautiful spirits that visited me, and I welcomed them to hang out all the time. I had a chime clock. I used to pass through cold breezes of air, and the Historic Society did not want to write about my house because my house had a history because of the shackles in the attic.
Anyway, Maria, since we're almost running out of time.
Oh, God, let's catch up with some of these things.
Yes, it's 47 minutes already, according to the clock. Can you imagine that?
What the hell is that
So how
thing?
Much more time now do I have to plug all the great stuff going on?
Go for it.
Okay, so since Dog Sees God, what has happened, the trajectory of Cappuccielli Productions is that... my husband and I and my three children were all in the biz. Steve is a writer, earning his living and, of course, in advertising, but he's always written. He and I have co-written a TV pilot.
But does he write only a copy or does he do the artwork as well?
No, he is a copywriter. A senior-level manager, but he's a copywriter.
An agency?
Yeah, big agency. He's
Which
worked
one?
For years.
Quick.
Right now, he works for Epsilon in Manhattan. He's down on Water Street, but
He works in Manhattan and you're here.
He works remote sometimes. He goes back and forth. And I go back and forth, yeah.
So when you go back and forth, you wave to the other airplane?
Yes. Okay, as an example, this weekend, the two of us are flying from opposite sides of the country to meet up for a fun getaway weekend in Sundance, Utah City.
Well, that's romantic.
Oh. Yes, I'm so excited. It's my first time there. I'm really excited.
Well, why don't you pick the middle of the country,
Sundance.
Omaha, Nebraska?
No. Sundance is the reason. So anyway, let me get up to speed here. So Steve is very much a part of the production company and a support. He's my co-writer and writer in crime. He's the creative force. He oversees a lot of the creative stuff that we have going on. I am engagement officer, producer, developer. I've optioned a couple of screenplays. Right now I'm shopping agreement with an amazing, talented writer-director, Benjamin Meyer, and co-producing with his wife, Beth Shatner, a screenplay that he's written, Trophy. I don't want to give away too many details about the script itself, but we're just really excited. We're at the stage right now of attracting financing and developing our package. And if all things are in place and go right, I should be in pre-production October, probably upstate New York on that. So that's really exciting. That's October of this year. The other project is a project that I co-wrote with, as a matter of fact, the young lead of Dog Sees God, Johnny James Fiore, resonated with this young man. He's talented. He's brilliant. He's ahead of his time. He's an old soul. And we basically touched upon our experiences, even though generationally very different, but in high school. And we wrote with another young man, a friend of Johnny's, Grant Harling, a screenplay called Reach, which basically touches many of the themes that are explored in Dog Sees God, the themes that are explored in a documentary film that I haven't talked about that's also wrapping production and going to appear on PBS KCLS for Mental Health Month this May. And we wrote this screenplay, Reach. Again, we're already talking to talent. We're already attaching financing. I'm working with a really passionate gentleman that I met at AFM who's a producer, and fingers crossed things will go right. And that will probably be in pre-production May 1st. So that's
another.
Do
you ever sleep?
No, I don't think so, Malcolm.
It didn't seem like 24 hours a day is enough time for you.
You know what? This last year, 18, first of all, I surround myself with people that I love and trust. I have an excellent assistant, Jessica, who is my limbs, literally. My daughter, Raffaella, has also stepped up to the plate. She works for the production company, and I can't do things. Yeah, you can't do things without people.
Okay, all of the things that you've done in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
You've been an actress.
Yes.
Okay. Producer.
Yes.
Director.
Yes.
Teacher.
Yes, I still teach. My coaching practice is my passion and love. I just came from New York, 8th year in a row. I went to the NSTEA student conference. I directed a 24-hour, I'm going to make your head spin, 24-hour film festival.
It's already spinning.
Not a film, a 24-hour playwright festival where I worked with two tech high school kids, one high school playwright, and three high school actors. And we cast it from 11 p.m. on a Friday night, and it got put up the next day, Saturday.
Wow.
6:30 performance and an 8:30 performance.
I didn't finish.
I know.
I have more fingers on my hands.
Yeah.
You're also a writer.
Yes.
Okay. And you make documentaries.
Yes.
Okay. Feature films.
Yes.
What TV. Did I leave out,
Malcolm? I'm also the mother of three actors, and I will plug my son, Stephen Cap. Is appearing on episode 2 of Teachers TV Land. I don't know the time, but that's tonight. And then I have a daughter, Raffaella Kapp, and a daughter, Natasha. Raffaella, this past year, had an amazing year. She wrote a short film and called Taking a Chance on Love. And previous year to that, she's also a prolific songwriter. One of her songs I produced into a music video called So What.
And is she a performer also?
She is an actress.
Did she sing?
What are the age? Raphael's, who's the oldest?
Raphael's 23. And she this past year, 2015, Taking a Chance on Love, had some success in the film festival circuit. Smaller, you know, not the big names like Sundance or Berlin, but small. Dances with Films, Kids Fest. Was Taking a Chance on Love. Hollywood Film and Vine, Taking a Chance on Love was an honorary mention in the short category. So What won Jury Award in the International Family Film Festival for Best Music Video. And Hollywood and Film, Vine, they gave her the award for Best Song in a Film Festival.
Fantastic. By the way, we're running out of time. Question.
Yes.
Do you want any of our audience to know can
how
they
to
go
find
to
me?
Anything or
yes.
how to find you
yes.
or email
Absolutely.
Address? Or
So I'm easily. Just Google my name, Maria Kapp, and you'll find Maria Kapp Acting Studio. You can find me on Facebook. Like my pages.
www.com.
You don't even need the W. Maria Kapp okay. Acting Studio.com. And then for the production company, it's going to be Cappuccielli.com. C-A-P-P. RICIELLI.com.
I like the way you had to think to remember.
Right.
It's the only way. It's the only way. And I have to plug my parents. Their maiden name, D'Agostino.
D'Agostino, eh?
The food store in New York, right?
I remember that. Yeah.
My mom says, why couldn't you name the production company D'Agostino?
I used to go to D'Agostino's on 90th and Broadway.
That's right. I'm not related to the family.
You sure?
No, I'm positive. I'm positive, but anyway.
Anyway, I think we have to wrap up. Stan, do you have any good words?
Well, my words are only that I'm glad that we were able to get Maria to come back, Maria Kapp,
I loved it, and I'm so excited.
She is so busy. You know how long it took going back and forth?
Well, she's so energetic. She
But she's so busy. She has like 18 different jobs.
Well, actually, we're going to talk to her about a project.
Oh, and Natasha, I can't leave my Natasha out. Groundling stand-up comedian.
Oh, really?
Funny little girl. Amazing.
That's one of the hardest things to do.
Yes, you can find my kids, too. They do stand-up comedy with an amazing company called the Standing Tall Comedy Troupe. I love you, Colette and Christian. I'm plugging you.
But you know something else? Those people who are good comedians,
yes,
they generally make the best actors.
Yes, great groundwork. She started today at the Groundlings, plugging
that too.
She had an audition.
Famous group.
Her goal is Saturday Night Live, that chickie.
Well, anyway, guys.
Okay, all right. I won't say any more. We have to cut it.
We have to cut it, Stan. By the way, everybody, we are now on Malcolm Digital Radio. You go to malcolmdigitalradio.com. You really don't even have, we can put www.malcolmdigitalradio.com. It's going to be a group. It's no more a radio station because eventually we're going to have videos on it. It's podcast, but it'll also be, we'll have video things.
That's awesome.
Like you could bring in things that you want seen, and we can include that as part of the show. It's a whole new industry.
Beautiful. I wish you guys the best of luck.
We're getting in on the ground floor. In fact, lower than the ground floor.
Oh, and you're at an amazing space. Mark Grau Studios here is beautiful.
Oh, yeah, yes. Well, eventually we're going to have cameras here, either webcam or video cam, and we're going to... You can see us. You can see us now if you go to Malcolm Digital Radio because we have the old shows on. Anyway, Stan, do you have anything to say goodbye?
God, no. Goodbye to all of you people out there as soon as you turn us on. And or tune in and turn on or whatever.
Or turn on.
And Maria, I got to tell you, thanks again.
Oh, it's my pleasure.
It's always a pleasure to have
you
here.
Anytime.
And
okay, what are you doing next week?
I have a guest I would love to recommend, Angela Hutchinson from Breaking Into Hollywood. She is a firefighter, a firecracker, and she's a force to be reckoned with. She would be great for you to have as a guest.
We'll speak.
Send us something.
Absolutely.
Anyway, guys. That's it. It's a wrap.
It's a wrap. Okay.
It's a wrap with Cap. If you have any comments, you can reach us. Just go to our internet site and...
Thank you.
Make comments. And bye.
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 That's a wrap.
See you next week.